This is New Home Insights, the John Burns Real Estate Consulting Podcast. I'll be your host, Dean Worley. As the title promises, we're going to bring you insights into everything housing. Latest trends, innovations, observations, and issues of the day. We'll bring in colleagues here at John Burns and also some major industry players from all across the country. This podcast is going to be quick, fun, but also hopefully make you think. So see you here every couple of weeks. Now let's get to it. Welcome to New Home Insights with John Burns Real Estate Consulting. I'm your host, Dean Worley. Today we have another extraordinarily special guest. It is Todd Tomalak from John Burns Real Estate Consulting, who is the national, international guru of building products. Todd, please say hi.
Wow, Dean. Thank you. Hi.
Hey, you're international. You've done work in Canada, I'll bet.
Canada counts, I suppose.
There you go. So today we are going to be talking about smart homes, what they are, what they really are, I think, and what they mean, how smart are they, and how smart can they be in the future. So buckle up. Let's start off with basics, Todd. How is a smart home defined, and how should it really be defined right now?
Yeah, I think it's important to get that answer right. So smart homes are defined right now as some home that has features that makes your life easier, but they're also connected. So you can go online, you might be able to use your phone. Ideally, they talk to each other. You know, we might think of those as Internet of Things types of devices. There's plenty of products that are out there that are being labeled, you know, smart products, but maybe they're just electronic and we don't really think of them, you know, in the smart category, but you got to be connected.
So that interconnectivity, that's what really makes you smart.
Yeah, I think the ability for interconnectivity allows devices to learn and do new things and interact with you in ways that were beyond what the original manufacturers had originally penciled in. So, and we'll talk about that probably more on, but we saw that with the iPhone.
Yeah. We'll talk about that in a minute. But there are some things out there that maybe advertise themselves as smart, but aren't all that smart. My personal favorite is the smart toilet. How smart really is that? And how smart do we want our toilets to be, maybe? Am I being paranoid?
So I've used some of those products and I really liked them. First of all, they were phenomenal experiences where toileting goes.
Well, okay. Do tell.
I don't know that they're smart, though, in the sense that that they're connecting themselves to, you know, your other features in your home. So right now, some of those smart products are more like, you know, the TV with the remote control it's a feature. It's electronic, but it doesn't make it a smart TV. It's got to be able to dial up and connect to Netflix and do other type of things. So that's kind of where the dividing. Some of them are riding the line.
Okay. But I mean, not to belabor the toilet thing, but again, do we want our toilet to be interconnected with the rest of our house? I'm not sure.
I think I'm a believer.
Okay.
We can talk about why, but I think the opportunity in the future, or maybe there's something there. It's not there now, but who knows?
I see. Okay. Well, okay. I think at some point in this conversation, by the way, you're going to scare me. I'm just going to warn you ahead of time. How about this idea of, you know, how does a new smart device related to the home become accepted? What's the process or the timeline for something to break into that smart home environment?
So when we look at major breakthroughs in technology, so the internet, microwaves, you know, things like that, we typically see the same shape happen. And some, you know, consultants will refer to that as the S curve of adoption, where there's this very slow adoption. And then you get to about 20% of households that have this in their home. And then there's this fairly rapid growth. Once you get to 20% to about 80% adoption, that's where high speed internet is today, is 80% adoption. Okay. But just to give some perspective, smart speakers right now are hanging around 21% adoption. So just turning that corner. And if we rewind and look at some of the other, you know, big breakthrough products that we've adopted and now they're part of our life, Microwaves took about 10 years to go from 20% to 80%. Mobile phones, you're looking at about 11 years. Tablets, we're not quite there yet, but that's about 12 years. So let's say it's about a 12-year average. Internet was a little bit longer. So that means that we're probably about, with smart technology, where we were with microwaves in the early 80s.
Wow. Yeah. You don't think that microwaves took that long, if that, you know, that it seems like they're there and then everyone had one. But no, it takes it. There's a process there. I'm not going to lie, by the way. What is a smart headphones or smart speakers?
Ooh, I think that's one of the more interesting categories. So that's, we see Amazon and Google have each put out some of these products where it's a couple $100. You put this speaker in your home and it listens to you.
Oh, you mean like Alexa and Echo? Is that okay? Gotcha. Okay, I say that I don't know what that is, and I have an Alexa in my house right now, so I didn't realize it was called. I just call it Alexa, and she responds with annoyance to me. But that's between me and Alexa. I don't want to. It's kind of personal. I don't want to get into that. We don't like each other. But so that I mean, that's something that's really on the cutting edge, right? I mean, will that be almost the focal point of a smart home, do you think?
I think that there's a lot of evidence that suggests things are going that way. You know, for a long time, we saw all these building product companies. If you went to the builder show this year, IBIS this year, you saw all these building product companies coming out with smart products. And the thing was, they were great innovations. Some of them had cool electronic features, but they didn't really talk to each other particularly well. Some of them had, you know, you might think of as their own operating systems, and they didn't really want to link up with other operating systems. What these, you know, call it a smart speaker or personal assistant or Alexa or whatever it might be, it seems that one of the common threads that we're seeing is that these companies, which are not really building products companies, I mean, they're tech companies, are incorporating that, you know, through your speaker, you can heat up your shower, or through your speaker, you can lock your door, or you can do these other things. So it seems like it's going that way.
Okay. That'll be interesting. Let's talk about that more in a minute in terms of control. But first, let's talk about just, you know, what do you see as some of those smart features that really are things that proverbially people will pay for? In other words, I'm sure there's tons of stuff out there that sounds neat, but I'm not going to pay for it. Or what do you think out there is really going to become or is already kind of those bread and butter that people will put some money down for?
Yeah. So we're seeing some of that already happen. Here's a couple examples. So there are smart remote controlled thermostats where you can set the temp from your Alexa or from your phone or from someplace far away. When we have our huge survey of new home shoppers, 60% of new home shoppers say that they would spend extra to get one of those thermostats in their home. That's huge. I mean, to put it in perspective, if we ask the same question, same group of people, these are active new home shoppers, about 70% say that they'll pay extra for an oversized kitchen. And I don't think that we think of as an oversized kitchen as this, you know, exotic, who'd have thought, you know, type product in the home. It's pretty accepted. It's pretty standard. It's just your budget. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that almost that many are saying that they're going to pay that for thermostats. And we see similar things for like heating and cooling management. It's almost 60%, slightly less. Locks, the smart locks and security, which most of those new smart homes claim to have, they're really easy to retrofit. The number one group of all the consumers that are shopping that wants to put those in is seniors. They're the most willing to pay the extra. So, and that's not usually the group you think of as being the early adopters, but not the case. When it comes to security, that's, you know, they're doing it. So.
Tell our listeners what a smart lock does for folks.
Yeah. So a smart lock, mechanically, the insides probably don't look any different than a regular lock, but how you open it is you could drive up to your home. As you approach your home, the lock senses that you or someone else is there. It opens. So it's there for you when you leave. And if you forget to lock your door, it knows that you left and it locked it for you. And what's really nice about it is that, let's say you have a contractor coming or someone else visiting the home and you really don't want to give them a key, but you want to let them in one time. There are some locks out there that you can send them to their phone, a passcode, and it pushes you a notification that, hey, you know, Uncle Ted has entered your house and you know he's there to feed and water your cat. And when he leaves, if you don't feel comfortable with Uncle Ted being in your home, then you can say, well, this, we'll let that, you know, we'll let that key go away.
I don't want Uncle Ted in my home at any time. Not even once. I think most people would agree with me if they know Uncle Ted. So, but wouldn't that be embarrassing though, as you know, Uncle Ted says, hey, I came by again and you locked me out. What's going on? That could be awkward. So I don't know.
What's interesting about the security, so of the categories we ask about in our survey, about 3 out of 4 buyers say, yeah, they'll pay extra for some sort of wireless security system.
So, wow. So that's pretty,
that's huge.
Okay.
Yeah. That's now. Okay. Not to be, I told you I was going to get paranoid, but do you get any sense from consumers? I mean, that could be, you know, this is something that unlocks the door. Could that be mimicked? Is that a security concern with some folks?
Yeah. So my wife and I just had this exact conversation because we were thinking about putting in, and we're trying to choose which lock we wanted to put in our house. And, you know, I imagine that there's some, you know, if you have some Russian hacker that's that skilled that can break into anything, then yeah, okay, maybe. But if you're really worried about Uncle Ted, who already has a key to your house anyways, because he's come by several times, you know, what's your worry? And I think that's probably the way to think through that like anything else, it can be hacked, but so can mechanical locks. It's just a choice of, I'd like the push notification that tells me that someone went into my home, you know, or that my kids are home safe or that type of thing.
Gotcha. That's a good, yeah, you're right. That's a good idea. So if it was just you who went, so in other words, you walk in your home, it's going to tell you someone just walked in your home. You know, it's you and you're good to go. If it's not you, then you call the police and get Uncle Ted put back in prison where he belongs. How about in terms of, you mentioned that smart lock is a fairly easy thing to retrofit. So what does smart homes mean for new homes specifically? Does it give this advantage to new homes? Because, you know, I tell a lot of clients, you need to keep innovating because that's what separate, like ceiling heights became 8 foot to 9 foot. And the resale folks, they can't compete with that. Will smart devices give that kind of advantage to new homes, you think?
Well, it's funny that you say that. I mean, the potential is definitely there, because when you're building a new home, you can put anything in. You can put in, you know, a electronic thermostatic valve that can be controlled by Alexa. That's hard to retrofit. That said, when we look at the big builders that are building smart homes today, a lot of the products that they're choosing to put in are products that are pretty easy to retrofit. You know, the lock, you don't have to have any mechanical skill. You can install that smart lock in probably 20 minutes.
I would take an hour. My wife could do it in 20 minutes. I would ask my wife to do it in 20 minutes, but go ahead.
But we see that trend, you know, that a lot, it seems like the smart features that some of the new home builders are putting in are some of the easiest retrofit ones. But it doesn't have to be that way. There's a lot of products out there that are, you know, within the wall, a lot harder to install. If the builders are thoughtful about it, the opportunity is to make those products smart, which is, it's, think about how much harder it is to tear out your plumbing and to install a smart valve inside the wall than to, you know, do something that's like a bulb or a lock or something that's very easy to do.
Anything else that stands out? That's a good point. So smart valve, something internal. What? Anything else that stands out as something that would be hard to retrofit?
Well, the HVAC system can be retrofitted, but it's expensive to do. So it's expensive to put in a new HVAC system in a new home, but it's extremely expensive to put in an HVAC system in an old home. So I think, you know, the opportunity is to just, if you're making the choice on all these new products that you have to put in the home anyways, realizing that most of our respondents, you know, I mentioned seniors, but one of the things that jumps out too, when we look at this incoming wave of first-time home buyers, that they placed a lot less value on the brand of the building product that were in there. I mean, it used to be the case that you'd really focus on, you know, say, let's pick on plumbing, the fixture brand, or maybe, you know, the lighting brand, but they place a lot more value on the features than necessarily the brand. So this is an opportunity, since you're paying for the product anyways, to just select one with the features that happens to integrate to the rest of what they're looking for.
So maybe it's the new home, what the new home builders need to focus on is making, just sort of having as many systems as possible are smart and interconnected when that buyer first walks in the door. Because the more you got going, the less likely they'll be able to, a resale environment will be able to retrofit multiple systems within a home to be as smart as a new home is. Is that possible?
That's exactly it. You know, we don't know how smart homes will interact with people 3 years from now because the amount of skills that will be taught, but we want to make sure that, that it's not something that can be easily duplicated on the resale market. And that's what we're seeing right now, that Home Depot and Lowe's and some of these other companies, there's just a whole ton of smart products that are there for a reason, because they're easy to retrofit.
Yeah.
But the builders have a big advantage that everything's bare. Now's the time to install it. And we know that consumers will pay more for, you know, that breed of product, particularly the first time buyers that a lot of builders are pivoting towards.
Definitely. Definitely. Let's pivot ourselves to the idea of control, because this is kind of fascinating me. As you have Alexa and you have Echo, and that's why I mentioned the question a minute ago about, will that be the focus? Who is going to control the overarching technology of the smart home environment? I mean, will it be Amazon or Google, and leaving builders and product manufacturers to sort of, you know, develop some partnerships to be part of that environment, but, you know, they're not guaranteed it'll be very competitive, and they're not the ones to control. Is that the future, or will it be more open than that, you think?
Yeah, I think it's leaning that way. Here's how to think about that. Take yourself back in time to 2006 and 2007 and look at the major mobile phone carriers that were, you know, BlackBerry was out there, and you had a number of so-called smartphone providers, and they all had their own operating system, which means that they didn't really interact with each other. There was definitely no consensus on who used what. That's kind of what we're seeing happening now with building products and housing, where a whole bunch of product manufacturers make their own thing, but they kind of don't play together well. What we're seeing happening with Google and Amazon is they're spending a whole lot of time and money trying to add skills, which you might even think of the smartphone equivalent would be an app. If we didn't know who BlackBerry was or who Apple was or who Google was, we could predict who won that adoption race by looking at who had the most third-party developer apps. Because, you know, the iPhone, when it first came out, you know, there's this beautiful Steve Jobs pitch that, you know, now is memorable, but it was just an iPod with phone and internet. But when we think of the universe of apps that causes it to do all sorts of other things outside those three functions, those were built by other people. So we're starting to see Amazon stretch the amount of skills. I think Amazon's got about 30,000 skills that the Alexa can do. That's roughly equal to where Apple was for their iOS in 2009. Right now, Apple has about 2 million. Google has about 4 million apps that you can download. So it's definitely going that way. Here's one thing that's interesting. When we look at the categories that Amazon is paying developers to build, it's education, health and fitness, you know, productivity. There's all these categories that you don't really think of as a building product that's there, but will be brought into the home in the future. So they're building it.
So they'll be, is it going to be, so that sounds, that's maybe probably a good thing. So, I mean, I remember there's that famous video of, I think it was Steve Ballmer with Microsoft sweating crazy profusely and screaming, the future is all about developers, developers, developers. How they had put their money on, we want to be as open as possible to developers to make our products, to realize our products and make them more exciting for as many people as possible. Is that what Google and Amazon will do with smartphone? They'll open it up and you know, let the smart people sort of define the future?
Well, it seems like they're pushing adoption among the developers for skills, and they're rewarding the developers based on how many people are using it and how they're rating it. There's this great article of this 22-year-old guy who claims to be making $10,000 a month off Amazon Alexa. I bet you he doesn't even own a home, but it's all from services and products that are in the home. So
really,
that's where that universe is. We're seeing that go. So the fact that Amazon is paying for that, is really encouraging, because it means that even if the building product manufacturer, say you make a light, or say you manufacture appliances, Your internal engineers don't necessarily have to figure out the perfect optimum way for it to interact with consumers. As long as you let it interface appropriately and you create all these neat tools and, you know, ability to interface, another developer may figure it out and you happen to play the best. It'll help if you push yours, but yeah, we're seeing that's the direction things are going. An intuitive way to think about it is when we saw smart product adoption in, say, TVs, go back 10 years, it caused a wave of, you know, people got rid of their old tube TVs and they bought flat panels. Eventually they bought smart connected TVs, but
yeah,
it really didn't benefit the TV manufacturers as much as it changed, you know, how we consume media. So Netflix is alive and born. Some of these services are alive and born. So it enables the change of revenue from selling a one-time good to selling a stream of services.
Huh. Okay. Well, okay. So will a lot of these building product manufacturers need to partner up? Again, if it's Amazon and Google are kind of, and the app developers are kind of controlling that world, are they going to need to either get involved in app development or need to partner up with one of those big controlling companies to protect their market share? I mean, if you said lights, for instance, we won't name names, but if major light manufacturers don't get in a partnership with one of the biggies, will they be in trouble down the road?
Well, we hope they'll be okay. But I guess I would pose it to you this way. If you were BlackBerry 10 years ago and you asked yourself, you know, do we need to work on our app selection? The answer is really obvious that that's the only way to survive. They have great hardware, phenomenal hardware that, you know, some engineers might say is better than the competitors, but, you know, where are they? And I guess I would even point to using that same analogy for the builders that, you know, which of us would go to a cell phone store and purchase a unit that didn't have the ability to be connected and didn't have the ability to have the apps. We're seeing that.
Yeah.
The ability to stay up to date is going to be just critical.
So it's going to be universal. I mean, we're not too far where you know, it's not so much the smart home is setting you apart as a builder. Is you better have the smart home or you're non-existent.
Well, if we follow the same adoption curve, 10 to 12 years from now, we'll be at, you know, can you imagine building a home that has any other 80% adoption category and trying to sell it without high-speed internet? Or say we don't offer microwaves or we don't offer washers and dryers. That's where it will be because we've just turned the corner at 20% and adoption's growing rapidly. We're at where Apple was in 2009.
That's a great analogy, actually. So, okay, so let's look in your crystal ball. And where do you see smart technology going in the future? Is there something else you see it going? Anything on the horizon that you see changing what we think of as smart homes?
It's interesting because your home is your most personal place. Think about this wave of aging consumers. You know, John and Chris, our demographer, have done a whole lot of work on seeing this over the next 10 years, this enormous wave of senior buyers. Healthcare is not going to become irrelevant, and you have the opportunity here for it to be the most comfortable, least disruptive experience all from your home if the tech can catch up. And then other things we think about like entertainment, and I had mentioned, you know, education and food and drink. These are the segments that Amazon is incentivizing developers right now to write the skills for. So eventually, assuming that any one of these developers does a good job, we're going to see connectivity go that way. And then it's just a matter of getting the products in the home. The apps tend to point the way towards how the product gets used. When I think about how you interact with your phone, it's integrated. It's so part of your life because someone came up with the social media, you know, feature of the phone. It wasn't the tech. And that's where we're seeing that investment begin to move on the new homes.
Well, when I can go on the app on my way home and have my home pour me a delicious ice cold IPA, so it's there when I get there, then I'll be impressed.
I'm with you. It's funny, at the last builder show, there was one of the booths that I was especially entertained by, showed a Tesla. And they had a feature in the Tesla that from, you know, as you're driving in your car, you push the button and it prepares a cappuccino for you so that when you arrive, cappuccino's not far away from IPA. You know, we'll get there.
It prepares a cappuccino for you or, you know, lights up a blunt for Elon Musk. I'm just kidding, Elon. So, this has been a delight, Todd. This has been eye-opening in some ways. I think, you know what? I think you've walked me off the edge a little bit with my innate paranoia about smart homes. I hope I feel a little better about them. I like your analogy about the security. It's just think, you know, these things can be done analog as much as they can be done technologically. It's just a transition more than it is a radical change. Well, thanks, Todd. I appreciate that. I'm going to do a quick recap. Todd talked about smart homes and features, and that basically a smart home is something that makes your life easier, but is also interconnected. That interconnectivity is critical. It allows devices to learn and do new things. Some of the major tech breakthroughs throughout history have followed this kind of S-curve adoption process, and smart homes are at the beginning of that. The 20% usage rate that typically is followed by an explosion in adoption afterwards, up to about 80%. People will pay for things like smart thermostats, heating and cooling management, and smart locks. Smart tech is going to need to get better at talking to each other, and things like the smart speaker, like Alexa or Echo, are likely to be the focus of that connectivity. We have some smart home innovation is going to be critical for new home builders to maintain that difference with resales and be smarter and be more connected and be more holistic in their smart systems, because that's going to be hard to match in the resale environment. And then we talked about how Google and Amazon are likely going to be kind of more or less in charge of the overall smart home environment, and it'll focus on things like education and health and fitness and entertainment and pouring drinks into the future. Todd, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dean.
Until next time, please join us in a couple of weeks. We'll see you then.